T-Biz Podcast delivers tea news that you need to know. A recap of the week's major headlines with commentary and cultural trends hosted by Dan Bolton. It is the voice of origin for tea professionals and enthusiasts worldwide.
Tea nourishes and inspires. It is an ancient plant-based medicine that simultaneously heals and energizes the body as it soothes the mind. Making fine tea is a blend of artistry and craftsmanship. The $200 billion tea trade is fundamentally local, yet exerts global influence, employing millions to enhance the well-being of all. Hello, everyone. Here are this week's headlines. U.S. tariffs loom ominously over the tea trade. The 2024 Leafies Award winners are announced, and U.S. FDA orders nationwide chai recall. Plus, tea with a taste of Persia. Tea grower and organic tea brand owner Zubin Amiri is a champion of the Caspian Sea tea growing region, an area that produces well-regarded Persian Orthodox black teas. Iran's 92 million residents consume around 80 to 90,000 metric tons of tea annually, most of which is imported. Consumption averages 1.23 kilos of tea per person. That's a little less than 3 pounds, compared to the more than 6.5 pound average in 2013. In recent years, consumption has declined by more than half due to economic woes, competition with coffee, production declines from erratic weather, and the burden of sanctions that date back to 1979. Zubin joins us today to discuss the effect of the forced shift in trade from lucrative North America to European markets, and finally, Russia. He reports that while overall production declined last year to 28,000 metric tons, harvest totals could easily double by cultivating idled tea estates to meet domestic and overseas demand for premium, organic, pest-free, third-party certified teas. More in a minute, but first, this important message.
What makes a perfect cup of Ceylon tea? The perfect cup is from the tea businesses that ensure the protection of all the children living within their tea estates. We salute Keilani Valley, Telawakili, Bogawanthalawa, Harana, and Eliptia Tea Estates. Support Save the Children, Sri Lanka.
President-elect Trump's proposed trade policies include a significant shift towards protectionism, which could profoundly affect global tea trade dynamics. Three key aspects of his trade agenda include universal tariffs. Trump has proposed implementing a universal baseline tariff of at least 10% on all imports with higher rates for countries engaging in unfair practices. This approach encourages domestic production but may increase consumer prices and risk potential retaliation from trade partners. Targeted tariffs on China. Trump has further targeted China with a threatened increase in tea tariffs, currently at 15% on tea, to possibly as high as 60% on Chinese imports, aiming to reduce the U.S. trade deficit and address concerns over China's trade practices. Such measures could escalate tensions between the world's two largest economies, potentially leading to a trade war. Finally, restructuring trade agreements. The president-elect said he intends to renegotiate existing trade agreements to favor U.S. interests, potentially leading to increased tariffs and stricter trade terms with Mexico, Canada, and European allies. This could disrupt established supply chains and affect global markets. In September, the Tea Association of the USA firmly pressed the Commerce Department for relief from tariffs imposed during Trump's last term in office. Quote, "Due to the disproportionate economic harm these tariffs have had on the U.S. tea industry and U.S. consumers, our recommendation, once again, is to remove black and green teas, instant tea, and tea extracts from the product lists," end quote. Association President Peter Goji writes, quote, "Our position regarding tariffs on tea remains unchanged," end quote. In 2019, First Tee Marketing Director Jason Walker testified at congressional hearings on proposed tariffs. Quote, "It was our position then, as now, that these tariffs would hurt U.S. tea businesses and consumers more than China's tea industry," end quote. Walker explains that Chinese exports to the U.S., quote, "are a drop in the bucket," end quote, compared to domestic consumption and other trade partners. In the U.S., Chinese tea imports represent about 20% of total tea imports for consumption, comprising 30% of all organic certified tea imports and 30% of all green tea imports. Walker writes that these include uniquely valuable specialty teas produced nowhere outside China. This could be catastrophic for small and medium businesses that offer specialty tea. It would be similar, he writes, to telling dedicated wine customers that their favorite French wines are no longer within their price range and expecting them to be satisfied with Australian wines instead. According to the Consumer Brands Association, food and beverage prices and inflation are expected to increase with tariffs, as tariffs are, quote, "paid by U.S. consumers and by U.S. manufacturers," end quote, not by foreign nations. Despite the likelihood of increased inflation and higher food prices, most U.S. consumers, 56%, favor Trump's tariffs, according to polling reported by Ipsos. In 2018, China retaliated when the U.S. imposed 15 to 25% tariffs by imposing 15 or 25% tariffs on U.S. goods, including pork, fruit, and tea nuts. The UK Tea Academy and Fortnum & Mason Tea announced the winners of this year's Leafies, a global competition to recognize excellence in tea production and retail. The annual competition, now in its third edition, was founded by Jane Pettigrew, tea author, educator, retail consultant, and connoisseur. Judging is by a panel of respected tasters. Teas crafted in Taiwan have done well in previous contests. This year, they were awarded 8 gold medals and 10 received high commendations. Japanese matcha tea maker Yami Tea Kumyun was named Best of Show. Japanese teas won 16 awards with 10 highly commended entries. Sri Lanka has received 7 awards. And India tea maker Jay Shree won 5 awards, the most of any tea producer. A company spokesman at Jay Shree writes, "These awards reflect our commitment to the pursuit of perfection in a teacup, bringing the authentic taste of Assam and Darjeeling to tea enthusiasts," end quote. In the retail categories, Islington-based Katsut, Japanese tea specialist, topped the list of retail winners with 3 awards. Nepal Tea Collective and Santa Kapu each won 2 gold awards representing Nepal. The competition is open to tea makers globally and has seen an increase each year in entries from Japan and India, Sri Lanka, China, Nepal, East Africa, and even Portugal. An unlikely origin whose Quinta de Solhiao infusions in the non-sinensis categories won top prizes. Innovation is encouraged, and this year's winners include Copenhagen Sparkling Tea's Jasmine Darjeeling Chamomile Tea, sold ready-brewed in wine bottles. 2 ventures were also cited for their sustainability and social impact, Gazayatu in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, and Kaylee Tea in Sri Lanka. Business Insights. The Academy produced a lovely video narrated by Will Battle, who describes the judging process on YouTube. You can find a full list of winners at the UK Tea Academy-owned website, theleafies.co.uk. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration announced a, quote, "potentially hazardous," end quote, voluntary recall of batches of Oregon Chai. Manufacturer My Chai, based in Bend, Oregon, reported potential risk stemming from pH levels above 4.1. The Class 2 advisory indicates temporary or medically reversible adverse health effects. the probability of serious health consequences is remote. The recall is ongoing. No quantities were revealed, but distribution of the chai in half-gallon jugs is nationwide. Batch numbers reveal manufacturing dates in 2021 and expiry dates in 2023 and 2024. The company has asked retailers to remove 10 suspect batches. Consumers may qualify for a refund from the merchant where they purchased Oregon chai. The official FDA notice advises that lowering pH in foods increases the effectiveness of an organic acid as a preservative. Chai has proved problematic with previous recalls in 2022 by Chai Box Tea. And now, a word from this week's sponsor.
Hi, I'm Nish. I grew up in an organic tea farm and I founded Nepal Tea Collective in 2016. Tea is not just a beverage for me, but a catalyst for social change, sustainably empowering hardworking artisans like my parents for the past 30 years. I'm on a mission to make the whole world aware of the goodness of Nepali teas and the good that comes from supporting growers in this remarkable land. If you haven't tasted Nepali teas yet, you're missing out. Our award-winning teas are making headlines. Find out why. Visit Nepal Tea Collective's website to get a free sample of this extraordinary taste of the Himalayas. That's nepalteacollective.com. Or just send me an email at nish, N-I-S-H, at nepalteacollective.com. Cheers.
Tea grower and organic tea brand owner Zubin Amiri is a champion of the Caspian Sea tea growing region, an area that produces well-regarded Persian Orthodox black teas. Iran's 92 million residents consume around 80 to 90,000 metric tons of tea annually, most of which is imported. Consumption averages 1.23 kilos of tea per person. That's a little less than 3 pounds, compared to the more than 6.5 pound average in 2013. In recent years, consumption has declined by more than half due to economic woes, competition with coffee, production declines from erratic weather, and the burden of sanctions that date back to 1979. Zubin joins us today to discuss the effect of the forced shift in trade from lucrative North America to European markets and finally Russia. He reports that while overall production declined last year to 28,000 metric tons, harvest totals could easily double by cultivating idled tea estates to meet domestic and overseas demand for premium, organic, pest-free, third-party certified teas. Zubin Amiri is the CEO and founder of Zubin Organic, an Iranian agribusiness that produces tea, walnuts, oranges, raisins, and wild pistachios. He's the fifth generation to manage the family-owned business, which was founded in 1898. Zubin has been a member of the board of the Iran Organic Association since 2008 and serves as vice president of the board of BioCoop of Iran. He graduated cum laude from the Kogad School of Business at American University and holds a degree in French studies at École des Roches, as well as a degree from the Institute of La Roger in Switzerland. More recently, he studied global sustainability management at UCLA. Welcome to the podcast, Zubin.
I wanted to, first of all, express my appreciation towards your decades of putting time and effort and love into this industry and creating this awareness for farmers, for producers, for brand owners, traders, and your work deserves this appreciation.
Thank you, Zubin. What are the inherent characteristics of Iranian tea?
You know, Iran is famous for many agricultural products, pistachios, saffrons, even a variety of fruits, apple, citrus, and it's such a vast country with different climate zones. You know, we have about 11 climate zones out of 13 climate zones in Iran. So this gives us the ability to produce a vast variety of agricultural products on different parts of Iran. Now, where the best climate for growing tea has been found, it's on the north part, or I should say maybe north, more towards northeast of the country, south of the Caspian Sea, just by along the Caspian coastline, comes up the Alborz Mountains that these tea farms are situated. And the way the mountains are situated and the distance from the Caspian Sea and the whole topography and the climate that is created very close to the Mediterranean climate there on the south side of the Caspian Sea, the moisture that it creates, the amount of rainfall that it creates, and the slope situated and the gradients of the slope, which is on average, it's about 30 to 35 degrees. These all affect the taste and aroma and the tasting of the tea. We all know tea also really depends how you grow it, not only where you grow it, but how you grow it and how you pluck it and how you transport that plucked tea to a factory. And how does that factory really puts the care and attention and love into each processed tea? We produce a mostly orthodox tea in Iran. So we have a witter, and then we have rolling, and then we have oxidation, and then we have drying. So each of these parts of process, you have to follow a certain standard on how you are processing your tea. And in the 80s, Iran's tea industry went from a more traditional processing method to a more mass production machineries and processing. And that's where we lost a little bit of quality. Now, I can tell you in this last decade, we're going back to producing and concentrating more on quality tea. That means we're taking each process of orthodox tea more seriously and try to fine tune that art of, I call it the art of tea. How you process your tea is very important on how you get those extracts on the taste notes. In general, I would say the Iranian tea has different notes of cacao, green pepper, citrus flavor, and a kind of a toastiness that even might remind you of a hojicha tea or of a hojicha tea. We taste different teas from all over the world, and really has a unique character, and it's very pleasing and fascinating in terms of notes, the kind of taste you would expect from a fine tea. I see a lot more enthusiastic young entrepreneurs and producers that are getting into specialized teas, handmade teas, and giving more attention to this delicate process of making teas. So that's why we were seeing a lot of good teas coming out now, more higher quality rather than the old strategy of only mass production tea. So I'm glad that we're seeing that has been changed over the years.
I want you to elaborate on that briefly, because the tea you describe is exportable at a good price, but it's a highly competitive niche. Another 8 or 10 countries are making orthodox black tea. It takes work to find the right market fit, but regional teas with distinctive, pleasing flavors can create a market globally. Their taste, however, must be distinctive enough so that when someone takes a sip, they exclaim, "Oh my, where did this come from?"
So this is what I realized as the fifth generation in this industry, that we were losing the edge domestically, internationally, with the type of tea we were producing, which was more as a commodity tea. And that's when I decided to produce the first organic tea in Iran. And that was bringing up one level up in terms of the health consciousness of the type of tea leaves as the raw material that we're using to make it a certified organic tea based on EU standards and the NOP, USDA organic standards. That was the first stage of us trying to pipe up the quality that we are producing in Iran. And then the second stage was the fine tuning of each process, you know, from getting on the farms and growing this tea, from collecting them to transporting them, and then bringing it into the factory and not pushing it towards bringing it to that complete stages, taking the time and the rolling, not overloading the machinery that we use. If you are focused on the mass production, you're not going to put time, 3 hours or 3.5 hours in the oxidation level where all the characteristics or most of the characteristics of the black tea is made in there, the aroma, the color, and many of the noting characteristics is made. So that's time consuming and you have to be patient with it just when you want to brew it. And so that was a second stage that we got into in our own organization and company. And then the third stage was getting into the specialized tea, which is more hand processed teas, which it's very exclusive. It really takes the notes and flavors and the medicinal impacts to a different level. It's just maybe the touch of hand that goes into the process of making these teas. And you have to be much more patient than the regular machinery process into that. So that is where we find actually more demand for us. And our tea is to make more specialized handcrafted teas for the market. I think that the market is want something more unique in terms of characteristics of the tea they're drinking.
Will you describe Iran's tea terroir and harvest cycle?
Just the climate by itself and the rich soil that Iran has by nature and the very weather-friendly environment that we have on the Caspian coastline for growing tea. The experience of drinking a cup of tea from these mountains is what really motivates me and keeps me grounded. Iran's tea industry is a 6 month season. We start from late April to late October. That's our harvest season. And because of the winter is cold and these tea farms that are in the mountains get covered by snow, the pesticides is controlled by the cold and snow. There's no pesticidization in the tea farms. They do perhaps use some chemical fertilizers or weed control substance, but they don't use any pesticides for controlling pests. So that's a big advantage in making Iran's tea a very healthy drink in terms of the MRL substances that you would find in, like, let's say, some tea in south of India or Sri Lanka that has heavily been pesticides.
That's important for your export capabilities into European markets, particularly because the EU's maximum pesticide residue thresholds are a barrier for many tea trading countries.
We have about 25,000 hectares of land that has been used for tea right now.
Yeah.
And this is giving us roughly about 30,000 of processed dry tea.
Yep.
For this year, 2024, 18 years ago, I would say, we were producing about 60,000 tons of processed tea, which now has gone down to 28,000 for this year. Last year was about 30,000, and the year before that was 33,000. We can say easily this number can be pushed to 50,000, 60,000 hectares of tea farms, which will bring up the production somehow, I would say about 70-80% of the consumption can be supplied from the domestic production. But there are many key elements right now playing in the Iranian beverage consumption. Living and working and producing in a country like Iran at this point of history, it's really inevitable not to get caught up with politics.
Right, right.
I can easily say that the sanctions have been really hurting the agriculture and food industries. These sanctions start being implemented in 2010 and 2011.
Right.
They were probably the last layer of sanctions that were put on Iran for agricultural products. And, well, you know, this is not hurting the government, of course. This is hurting regular producers and farmers that are trying to make this tea and send it to everywhere in the world. We had to constantly shift our market from USA to Europe, and working with Europe for a couple of years, then they were not able to purchase our tea because of the sanctions that they were working with the American companies. They were not able to supply the Iranian organic tea to that market. So they shifted to the Russian market. Then Russia was sanctioned, Europeans. So that market was cut off. So it's really not only we have to juggle with the climate issues, domestic policies. Now we really are juggling with what markets are left for us to work and maneuvering around these sanctions so we can survive.
Iran drinks a lot more tea than what is currently cultivated, but you've got idle tea land that could be used. What's your guess on how many additional hectares could be cultivated?
Yeah, I agree. That's a great potential in the industry that we have, being a tea-consuming market. However, the behavior of the beverage consumption has recently changed. Some part of it has been taken by coffee, and some part of it has been taken by herbal infusions.
Right.
So 5 years ago, Iran was importing about 10,000 metric tons of coffee into the country. And this year, the import of coffee was about 58,000 tons of coffee. So almost six times more than 5 years ago. And so our observation of this is that people are probably switching because, you know, we, like the West had the coffee era, I believe we just were hit by the coffee era here in Iran.
Right.
Since, like,
right.
The early 1990s, the 2000s, when Starbucks came and everybody, that coffee hype came up. And now we're seeing that coffee era coming and entering Iran. We've opened these coffee shops all over the town and cities. And so, you know, coffee consumptions have gone up by five times. Tea is still a number one drink in Iran, you know, make no mistake. In the 1990s, we had a change in type of expectation and tea that we were producing. So we got familiar with scented teas, like, you know, bergamot flavors, which are chemical flavoring to the tea. So that's where the consumption went towards these kind of imported teas. But in the last, 10, 12, 15 years, we see a switch again. The market has realized that this type of tea perhaps is not the best choice for their health because of the chemical flavors that they're consuming.
Let's talk for a moment about the business of tea. Can you make money making tea in Iran right now?
It's still, wherever you go, whether you're invited to somebody's house or somebody's office, still tea is the main beverage that is being served. And people crave for their cup of tea of the day to get calm and relaxed and take the tiredness out of their body. That's how they explain. They say, let's drink a tea. I feel tired. I want the tiredness to get out of my body. So they believe that tea takes out the tiredness from their body and rejuvenates and energizes them again. And the problem is, I think, is mostly the clutter that we have and not having sufficient data and management and import. And most of the years, we're overflooded with imports. Why is this happening? Is because we are selling oil to some countries like Sri Lanka and India and Kenya that because of the sanctions, they cannot pay off us in dollars. They are giving us or paying off our oil with tea, for example, like what Sri Lanka and India and Kenya and these countries are how they're bartering oil with tea, which in that case, you know, that's going to be a lot of tea.
When those oil for tea barters occur, it's not a sale to meet market demand. Auction brokers don't assess the quality of each lot and buyers don't know precisely what they're getting. Meanwhile, arriving containers pile up quickly in the warehouse.
It's been a tough ride. You know, I have to be honest, you know, it's not so hard taking it in a couple of years, like let's say 1 or 2 or 3 years. But when this gets into a 15, 20 years battle and you just are surviving in that environment, it's not an easy situation. The question of shutting down a tea farm was never an option. So we had to continue and get through these new governance that was being imposed and being created either by international policies or the domestic market. It's been very challenging, but again, as you know, we say what doesn't kill you only makes you stronger. There's a good future for the Iranian tea to come to be noticed in the world. That's my main optimistic view and really what is taking me forward every day. And while this is happening, we are working on fine-tuning that mastery of art of tea making. When there's a will, there's a way. You know, doing business in Iran has an extra cost to it when you have to go around the sanctions. You know, you're not doing anything bad. It's just you want to sell your tea. We're eager to open these channels and have this fascinating tea to our tea lovers, to all these tea lovers around the world.
Intrigued by what you heard in today's podcast? Would you like to learn more from our global network of TBiz journalists and tea experts? Remember to visit the TBiz website for more comprehensive coverage. That's www.t-biz.com. Thanks for listening. Farewell till next week.
Produced by Atavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.